Now is unbettable to me at +910. I have him in pocket. We talked about this a couple of weeks. I got him around 18-1 when he was rip-roaring hot on the Live Tour, along with Bryson. Got him at 15-1. Bryson's still bettable, in my opinion. I think you can find around 12-1 on Bryson. I don't hate that. He's got a good history here. He played with McIlroy last year in the final day. He's got the. He's been in the mix. He's won majors before. Bryson, even top 10 right now, is plus money. Don't hate it. I think he can have a great weekend.
This is Pod to the Futures with Mitch Moss and Jonathan Von Tobel on VSiN, the sports betting network.
What's up, folks? Say happy April to you. I don't know if it's spring yet or not. We're pretty close, though. Jonathan Von Tobel, Mitch Moss, alongside in our usual spots here in Pod to the Futures. A good and exciting one at that. The Masters approaches. We're going to have a lot on what's going to happen at Augusta. The college basketball season is over. And I don't know about you, Mitch, because you and I are in the same fantasy baseball league. But for some reason, I am like really into the minutia of baseball to start the year. Really excited for this season. Not just the Angels. Jose Soriano's freaking awesome. But baseball, everything in between. How you doing, buddy?
Doing pretty well. I love early season baseball as well. I can't take the fluctuations in early season fantasy baseball. It drives me crazy. You're up 19 points one day. You're down 27 the next. You're down 16 the next day. After just like, can we stabilize a little bit here? I get it. It takes a long time. But it's fun regardless. And it's a great time of year. The second best time of year, in my opinion, for sports in general and for sports betting. Right behind the beginning of the football season when everybody has all that hope and the excitement. But we're going from the madness, the Final Four, into just an unbelievable stretch here, JVT. Yep. Love it.
Yeah, we should note, I didn't even mention, it's what you're alluding to there, the last week of the regular season in the NBA, the NHL postseason is around the corner as well, so that is going to be absolutely tremendous, and we're a month away from the Kentucky Derby, so there's going to be a lot to cover here over the next few weeks. There really is no downtime for the most part. And by the way, too, we're going to have a draft episode at some point pretty quickly because the NFL draft is rapidly approaching. There is actually, I don't know about you, and we're going to get to college basketball here in a second, but I was looking through some of the markets. This does not feel like a fun NFL draft. This does not feel like a sexy NFL draft at all in terms of betting. Like, there's not a lot there in terms of buzz.
It's funny. We have not even talked about this yet, and I have been looking on a daily basis, not going back at least, I'd say, 5 to 7 days. I kind of feel the same thing. Now, I will say, to the credit of the sports books, they have pretty big menus up, and we're talking, what, 3 weeks away? So they are offering quite a bit. And I wonder why it doesn't feel like it's exciting. Is it because we only have one, maybe two quarterbacks? Is that why? Because we're going to have plenty of wide receivers. We have a great tight end. We have an unbelievable running back. We have like marquee names overall. But why is it not that appealing?
Yeah, I think it's probably the quarterback thing, right? It seems like almost every year there's like this debate of, hey, which quarterbacks are going to go where? Who's the better one between one or two or three or something like that? And there's always that, I think, push and pull. And this year it seems pretty clear that we're going to get Mendoza. Maybe Ty Simpson. I don't think it's going to happen. And then after that, like, we're not going to get another quarterback. And who cares? You have three edge rushers that are probably going to go within like the first six picks and, you know, throw them in a hat, pull one out. It seems like that's going to be the order. So we will see if that's the case. We'll get to the NFL draft coming up a little bit later. But let's start with last night and spinning this forward because, of course, the college basketball season is over. That means that we, of course, have odds for next season. But Elliott Cadeau gets the most outstanding player last night for Michigan. How do you feel about this? And actually, to me, it does beg the question of, is this just the Final Four for most outstanding player, or is it a little bit more? I would assume it's just Final Four, but he wasn't great against Arizona. He had 33 minutes against the Wildcats, turned the ball over six times, shot 29% from the floor, but was pretty good last night and ultimately gets most outstanding player.
Well, I guess it all comes down to one thing, and that is the injury to Yaxel Lendenborg.
Yeah.
If he doesn't get injured, he wins that award, yeah?
I would assume so, just given what we know he can be and his potential production. I think that's probably it. So, yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, I thought, like, Mara only scored 8 points last night, but he was highly efficient, was very effective defensively, and and played 30 minutes. I mean, if you had, like, some sort of nuance to the way you evaluated these guys, I actually thought Mara had a pretty strong case, especially the way he dominated Arizona in the first game.
I thought Mara was an absolute beast down low defensively. And he might not get credit for a zillion block shots, but he had plenty of them. And the way that he altered, Terrace Reed last night did not have a good game. And Terrace Reed missed a lot of point blank shots. And a lot of that has to be the intimidation factor of Mara. Has to be. Because if those shots are going in early for Reed and those were makeable and shots that he was making earlier on in the tournament and throughout the entire year, UConn might win that game overall. I thought Mara, his presence in general was just jumped off the TV screen over the last two games.
Mara before the tournament, 50-1. Sweet 16, prior to the Sweet 16, 50-1. Before the Elite Eight, 48-1. Before the Final Four, he was 18-1. And then before last night, he was plus 325 to win most outstanding player. This is from Covers, tracking the odds there. And then, of course, did I say Mara? I meant Cadeau. But either way, yeah, Cadeau. Sorry, I apologize for that. That hit me. And, of course, we had the storyline going into the Final Four, which was he has this allergic reaction, and you don't even know if he's going to be available.
How about that? I mean, you had plenty of storylines going into that game last night in general.
Yep.
With, I mean, what? And oh, by the way, I must point this out. We had two, I am so anti halftime interviews with coaches or timeout interviews with coaches or players.
Shout out Stormy Bonatoni, my co-host.
Well, I mean, it just, they okay. So.
It's okay. I told her her job is useless before.
We had two of the best last night I've ever heard. One, Hurley, he just admitted immediately the only style of basketball we can play against this team and have a chance to win is ugly. That's what we're trying to do. And then Yaxel at halftime basically told you how injured he was and how horrible he had been in the first half. I thought that was exceptional for that kid to admit it.
I thought that was pretty wild for a kid to come out there. Like, what a paraphrase. What was it like? I'm hurting. Like, yep. My body doesn't feel right.
I don't even know why I'm out there, kind of is what he said. He's like, I'm just hurting our team right now, and I don't feel great, but I'm going to try to muck through this. So credit both those guys, and you don't get those sound bites all the time. But Hurley was spot on, too. The only chance they had to win that game. And look at the coaching difference between him and what Tommy Lloyd came up with in the Final Four. He knew you can't run with this team. You have to make it ugly. You got to play slow. You got to try to get second possessions. You got to try to. They took a ton of threes and they weren't going last night, but they had their chances. Like they had their chances to open it up a little bit in the first half. They couldn't capitalize on that. I would also say that I hate it when referees are a storyline. They were awful last night.
Yeah.
I mean, the flagrant right away in the first half was brutal. And then all of a sudden, it felt like they were allowing Michigan to play quite a bit, especially defensively. And then the ticky-tack crap on UConn throughout the game, I hated what the referees did in that game.
Yeah, to me, it's always about consistency, and it didn't really seem consistent.
Nope.
It's always, if you know, foul A is a foul in the first half, it should be a foul in the second half. And if it's not in the first half, it shouldn't be in the second half. And that always is what drives me nuts. And if you're going to call some, because you give players a chance to adjust to the way you're calling a game. But when you're all over the place with the way that you're calling a game, then all of a sudden you just can't really get it consistent. And there was some ticky-tack stuff down the stretch, too, last night as well. So I'm with you. Like, the consistency, and that was going to be a big way that this game was potentially settled. I mean, Michigan was a pretty good defensive team in terms of free throw rate for opponents. And so if you were going to call a bunch of nonsense, I mean, just let them play the game. And there were times, especially like you talked about, I mean, Hurley, some of the reactions, as usual, with the suit that was falling apart and all tattered up, absolutely losing his mind.
I'll be completely honest. I got into the broadcasting business so I could do play-by-play. Career took a different path many years ago.
Mm-hmm. By the way, for our audience, it doesn't know, right? You did Mountain West stuff for a while.
Yeah, I did a bunch of Mountain West Conference basketball tournament games.
Former voice of the Las Vegas, what was Vince Neil's arena football team?
Oh, boy, I just had this conversation,
too. Was it Outlaws? It wasn't Outlaws.
Might have been Outlaws, yeah. But the UFL, the United Football League, Jim Fossil's team, that was really good. But,
oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, the back-to-back champs, the Locos.
I would not hide it on the mic during college basketball games. When the referees were horrible, I'd say it on the air. Mm. I'm like, I'm not going to hide this. I'm not going to be a homer I wasn't a homer to either team. I was calling it down the middle. But if the referees were awful or calling ticky-tack or inconsistent, I'd say it on the air. I don't care.
Yeah. You have to if it's pretty obvious. Yep. All right, so we spin this forward. Duke is your favorite to win everything next year at 8-1. I'm looking at DraftKings, by the way. So again, look around. Michigan's 12-1, Florida 14, Arizona at 15, Kansas at 16. The usual names. Michigan State also at 16, Illinois 18. This is Houston and Arkansas. Then you get to UConn at 20-1 and on. Are you betting college basketball futures at this point? I mean, we're talking about Tuesday. We're getting transfer news, which will hit here in a second. You know, body's still moving around and whatnot. Are you really trying right now to get out ahead of some of this stuff?
I am going to monitor the transfer portal for a couple of guys specifically because I think they can be absolute game changers.
Okay.
And it depends on where they land I'm going to probably fire on that team. So I might put my first future in pocket this week already. But that's, we're taping this on Tuesday morning, and the transfer portal just opened up, and we have, I think it's, I saw this an hour ago, like 1,900 names in the portal already.
Yep.
And we, like, the biggest one is the kid from Belmont going to Tennessee. He had a really good season. He's a sharp
shooter. Tyler Lundblad, by the way.
Yep. He's a dead-eyed dick out there in the court. But I'm not going to bet Tennessee because it's Rick Barnes. So, but there are other guys, and I wish that
Hold on. Can I push back a little bit on that? Rick Barnes went to three straight Elite Eights. I mean, he's not like, he's not terrible.
Is he cashing tickets on a future that you want to bet in April?
I mean, I don't know about that, but it's a little unfair to say Rick Barnes is terrible when he's made it to three straight Elite Eights.
Did I use the word terrible?
Yeah.
If I did, then...
No, you know what? No, maybe you didn't. You just said it's Rick Barnes, a baby.
You're right.
I just feel like we have a lot of standards for these guys. We're like, yeah, they're actually kind of achieving at a pretty high level. And making it to an Elite Eight, I mean, who knows once you get there? But I feel like that should be... This shouldn't be viewed as a detraction when you have a guy that's constantly putting his team in position to have bites at the apple, if you will.
Well, for me, betting a year out, it is. So I'm not going to back a Rick Barnes team in April. If this is September and the odds don't change and he puts together a great team, maybe. But I don't want to do it already in April. It kills me, by the way. John Blackwell, awesome year for Wisconsin. He's going to transfer out. So, and he's ranked between like top two and top four, top five in terms of guys who are going to be hitting this portal. But again, we don't have a lot of news on where these guys are going to go yet, so I can't give out any recommendations. But there are some teams and some rumors that I'm intrigued by. I think St. John's at 35-1. I think they can put together another good portal this
year. Are
they going
to get a point guard?
He has to, doesn't he? He can't have that same attitude.
You have to. Yep. Like the offense at times, it was their downfall. The offense was awful. Like you have to be able to get a guy that can not only go north-south, but also facilitate, move the ball. Like, and I mean, another shooter would help because you can't shoot. It's been 2 or 3 years now where you have this team that's awesome defensively, but is listless whenever they have to play against a set defense.
Sure. I would also point out, you know, looking at some of these teams who are going to spend a lot of money in the portal again, will they actually get it right this year? I'm not going to bet Kentucky. They are 35-1 at DraftKings, but they had a $22 or $23 million roster this past season. The problem was it was not a well-constructed roster, and they went basically nowhere. I still like Pope as a head coach, but I thought his team last year was really, really good and did a great job in year number one. But they're going to spend money, and that's what I would look at, by the way. I would look at teams who have kind of limitless funds, so to speak, and you know they're going to go out there and probably put together a $25 million-esque or ish kind of roster.
Yeah. I would agree. It's actually kind of crazy that Wisconsin can't hold on to Blackwell. Like, that's kind of wild.
How?
In this era.
I know. Like, they don't have the money to make him run it back for one more year.
Right.
Like, I kind of find that difficult to believe.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe it's a personal thing, but like, I find it shocking that a program like that would not have the funds to be able to keep him. But I don't know the intricacies of the Wisconsin basketball program and the front office and who the boosters are. But it seems wild on the surface.
Yeah.
Let me hit you with this before we get out of here, since we're talking about this topic. The big news yesterday: North Carolina's throwing. The way I put it was, they're throwing money at their problems. They threw money at Bill Belichick and our old former colleague Michael Lombardi to get out there for the football program, and they throw money yesterday at Michael Malone to go and be their head coach. Now, this is more professional than it has been in years past, so I think Malone's tact will work. And what I mean by that is, look, he's an a-hole. He drove a wedge between himself and the front office out there in Denver. Is one of the big reasons why he got fired. Adelman is doing a tremendous job with this Nuggets team now, and they are still on the right path. But we know Malone could be an X's and O's guy. I wonder if his shtick works out there in college when these guys are slightly more entitled, because they know, as we just talked about with Wisconsin, they can go find a bag in many different places. Will these players put up with Michael Malone? And it seems like the athletic department there at North Carolina is very much trying to gear both of their big sports into, hey, come here, we're like professionals, and then we'll get you ready for the next level. Given the fact they have two former pro head coaches at football and basketball, North Carolina's 25-1. Do we buy the Malone hiring at all?
I'll buy into the hiring. I can't buy in on a 25-1 ticket at this point.
Yeah.
I need to see what this is going to look like. Certainly putting together a team for next year. It's a great question about how he was just like in players' faces. Like, his face was always fire hydrant red, almost to it was almost purple, had a purple hue to it, sweating out there as well, ferocious on the sideline. Will that work at the college level? I don't know. It seems to me like the Bobby Knights of the world, the Bob Huggins, the Chris Beards. I do like Chris Beard quite a bit, but that kind of the Frank Martins. You know, that's more like 80s, 90s college basketball now, and maybe gone by the wayside. Is he capable of dialing it back a little bit to relate to the younger players? Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you've seen this on Twitter. There's an old clip of Danny Hurley going around. They're playing Michigan State, and I don't know what game. It wasn't this tournament game because the score bug was different and everything. But you can clearly read his lips, and they're all huddled up, and he's just screaming at every single one of them. You're effing soft. What the F? Like, just getting after him the whole time. It can work, but you've got to be able to back it up to an extent. I mean, Hurley's a good enough coach that, you know, there's something there. Maybe a finals trophy in the way that he helped Jokic in his career is going to be there and be worth it for some of these players to buy in. But it'll be interesting to see how they react to him.
I think all you have to do is look at a guy like Alex Caravan.
Yeah.
If Hurley is this guy who is just a prick and nobody likes to play for him, why he stay all 4 years?
Yeah.
That's
a good point.
In this day and age, you're telling me Caravan could not have gotten more money at a different program? Mm-hmm. He could have been. He could have probably. Like, we're talking about a $3 million bag for him to be, like, the number one guy on a team.
Yep. That's a good point. All right. Really quick, before we get off college basketball, just a shout-out to Matt, who had tweeted us and said it's never too early for futures. He had bet Michigan preseason last April, 2025, at 30-1.
A year ago tomorrow.
Yeah.
Is when he bet that.
That's what I'm saying. All season.
Like, and by the way, Humans bet Michigan in late May this year at 20-1, I believe, is the number that he got.
Okay.
So I'm okay with tying up some money for 11 months to win next year if the portal hits right.
Anything else in college basketball?
Kind of a bad tournament.
You think so?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say this. I lost interest in it as it went along. I don't know if I said either. Well, no, and it's actually, I'm not approaching it from a negative thing. To me, it's actually, for college basketball, personally, it's two things. One, I like the regular season more than I like the tournament, to be quite honest with you. The regular season is a lot more fun, tracking all the conferences, watching late night games, doing all those sort of things. And the tournament itself, to me, is more of a social event than anything else, especially that first weekend. You know, you and I spent quite a bit of time on that first weekend, right? Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, just out of different places, watching games, you know, having a good time, gambling while you're doing it. And then as it goes along, there's fewer games. And I'm just like, all right, cool. Like, well, I'll just watch some of these games and obviously want to pay attention for work and whatnot. But I feel like out of all of these, there's such a buildup to the start of the tournament. And then it peters out with just like one game. I don't know. Like, they're going to add more teams, whatever it is. Here's my hot take. This isn't really going to be a big hot take, or it's got to be that interesting. You'll probably be like, that's stupid. What if you had like a third place game? Just to give a little bit more volume at the end of it. You know what I mean? Just to give us something, because it kind of peters out with the Final Four and then just like one game on a Monday night. Like, I don't know. It just kind of, it dies down to me for sure.
They used to do that many years ago. Third place game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think that was back when it was called the NIT. I might have my timeline mixed up on that, but I'd be for that, sure. But it's also like, it's tough because the first 2/4 days are so good typically. It's tough to match that as the tournament gets on a little bit longer. Also, I know that the new format they're going to bring in by expanding it to, 78 teams, that's going to be poo-pooed, and people are going to be pissed, and I think it's dumb and unnecessary. However, once the games actually get here, I'll be excited.
Sure.
Like the Tuesday and the Wednesday now, before the actual tournament begins, it's going to be littered with a ton of games.
I'll be excited for it, too. I think it's just more about the event, and I don't know how you feel, but I just think the regular season's way better. Sorry, I got distracted because I almost unplugged my computer, and that would not have been good. All right, let's take a break. On the other side, it is a big week. College basketball wraps up. We turn our eye to Augusta. So I have something to admit, even though I work in sports media and have for a very long time, and this may or may not discredit me as a member of sports media, and it has to do with the Masters. Mitch?
You don't like it?
No, I actually really like the Masters a lot. Golf itself, I actually really like watching golf tournaments. I really do. I just don't have the bandwidth around this time to follow the inner workings of every single tournament leading up to it. End of the NBA regular season, college basketball, NBA postseason starts, NHL postseason starts. But if you just sit me down and lock me in and say, hey, you got to watch this tournament, I would love it. I think golf is a fantastic sport to watch. It's very entertaining.
It might be my favorite sport to bet.
Yeah. I mean, there's that too, because you get the sweat of a future, pot of the futures, but that pays off in the course of 4 days. So it's a ton of fun. It's absolutely fantastic. There's not many, there's not really any outside of like racing where you'll get a long shot to pay off within a short amount of time like mm-hmm. that. So it is a ton of fun outside of like maybe some hefty money line underdogs in baseball and hockey and whatnot. My admission, if you put together a lineup of pictures, could not point to what an azalea is. I don't know what an azalea is.
Okay. Well, just watch the TV.
Just watch that build up, and that's what it was.
Watch the TV coverage. They're going to say the name 4,000 times, and you're going to remember what it looks like when they pound it into your brain this year.
I mean, I watch 1,000 times. I assume, is it the bush, or is it like the big red flowers?
It's a flower of some point, of some
kind.
Yeah, okay. Some kind, yeah.
All right. Well, with that, Augusta is around the corner. We do have, I have one in pocket already. This is from months ago here on the pod. Yeah, got her up. When we talked about him quite a while ago, I've got him in there to win it right now. I'll be adding some over the next couple of days, but I will give you the floor here because I know that there's a couple of things you pointed out, including I was reading this article you sent over from Dave Tindall, who put it together, his 10-year trends guide for the 2026 Masters. And I know you've got some bits here, but I will say this. The one thing that surprised me reading through this, I had no idea that this thing was dominated by the 20-year-olds.
That's right. That's his number one trend that he points to.
That was great for our audience. So this is from Tindall again. As he puts it, good for the 20-somethings. If you look at this, those in their 20s had won each of the previous four Masters. Excuse me. Let me start here. Rory McIlroy was 35 when he won last year, becoming only the third 30-something in the last decade to lift the trophy. Those in their 20s had won each of the previous four, and starting from a 28-year-old Danny Willett in 2016, 20-somethings had won six of the last 10 Masters.
Mm-hmm. How about that?
That's pretty wild. I didn't really think that was – is that a sign of the demand of the course and walking it in the hills? I know that Tiger Woods, at times when he was still dealing with his back, he would cite the fact that walking the course was pretty rough for his back, and that's maybe one of the reasons why he would kind of fade sometimes, but – That's pretty wild. I didn't realize the youngsters got it.
Sure. And Dave wrote, by the way, so some golfers, right, in their 20s that you still want to maybe take a peek at would be Scotty, still in his 20s. Mm-hmm. Cameron Young, who is down to like around 20-1 to win. I can't bet him at that number, but I know people who have him around 50 or higher before he won on tour this year. Bob McIntyre, Colin Morikawa. And I bet Colin when he was red hot a month or so ago.
He's got the back.
Yeah. And he said he doesn't know if his body's not in a good spot right now, basically, is what he said.
His comment yesterday, we're going to play the clip today. His interview yesterday did not sound great.
No, not at all.
So I assume he's going to come out and shoot like a 61 on Thursday.
First round leader bet. There you go.
Yeah.
But so he puts together all these 10-year trends. And what, again, trends a lot of time, it's a fun talking point. They really don't pay their rent. But this has been like a common occurrence. And I read his piece like every single year. So maybe there's something to this. You have to be, obviously, world ranking, the higher the better. If you're 1 through 20, he gives that more points overall than if you're like 21 through 31. Experience at the Masters is a big deal. Fuzzy Zeller, the last debutante to win it back in 1979. It took Rory McIlroy 16 different attempts to win at Augusta. Jordan Spieth, Danny Willett, they won back-to-back in 2015, 2016. And they only had one appearance each. But overall, if you've played, he weights this heavily towards if you've been in the Masters three times or more. Eight of the last 10 winners have played in at least three Masters. He points out that you probably need, or it's good to have, a top five finish in the Masters at some point already in your career. Big name golfers who do not. Matt Fitzpatrick, Cam Young, Victor Hovland. So he goes on and on and on with 10 different trends that he points out, sets of criteria. And then at the very end of it, when he ranks them all, like who's going to be the winner this year, the golfer with the most points is Jon Rahm.
Yep.
Now, he's in his 30s. So, by the way, when he weights all 10 trends with certain points, like I was trying to say, like 8 points for this one, and you can agree or disagree with
this point
system.
It's an accumulation of the points. Yeah.
That's right. So there are 79 total points. John Rahm qualified or hit 76 out of the 79 points. Two points ahead of Cam Young, which is pretty tremendous for him. Then it goes Colin Morikawa, again, health injuries or health concerns here. Tommy Fleetwood and Fitzy. Yeah. Then it drops to the next level with Bryson, Russell Henley. Then it drops down 3 points to Scottie Scheffler. And then two more points down after that, it's Xander, Hideki, and Patrick Cantlay.
Yeah.
Do any of those names interest you? Did they already? Or would this kind of win you over to make a bet on any of them?
So Rahm was already kind of on my list, even though he's very short, obviously. But I like to have like a short shot or two coming into this thing. And I mean, he loves this course. We can talk about course history and whatnot. He's one of the top performers in terms of true strokes gained over a large sample size. So outside of even the trends you're talking about, he's just played well here. So I like Rahm. Tommy Fleetwood's always going to be like, so for a long time at the beginning of the VSiN tenure, Hideki Matsuyama was my white whale. Trying to get him to win one of these majors because you knew that he could. He finally gets there when he wins a few years ago. Maybe it's like five now. I don't know. It's been a while.
It feels like
You were right. Something like that. Fleetwood's going to be that guy for me too. I mean, Fairway Jesus has the game to do it. I know there's this whole thing about him out here and whatnot, but I just feel like his game is suited for a course like this. In one of these years, he is going to break through. The fact that he is on a list like this, I think, does make me feel a little bit better about his chances potentially this year and adding him to the overall profile. And actually, I know it's the back thing. If you listen to what Colin Morikawa said, and he talked about his body, as we mentioned, one of the things he talked about was actually, and I'm paraphrasing, like the back isn't bad, it's just the rest of the body. And, you know, your back's tied into a bunch of things and whatnot. So, you know what I mean? So maybe the back's not as bad as we think it is. And maybe he's actually going to be okay because he's like in the range of like 30 to 1. And I think a lot of that is like the back injury. If I'm getting Morikawa in that range, like, I don't think that's terrible at all, even with the risk of what's going on with his health.
Let's see where he's at right now.
I was making my rundown and stuff last night, DraftKings had him at 31 to 1.
Okay. So, yeah, he's right at the same number right now. By the way, don't be afraid to dabble into the placement markets for the Masters as well, because it's tough to win this event and it's tough to land on the exact guy who's going to win it. Like, I have six guys outright. I like where I'm at right now. Does that mean that they're going to win? Absolutely not. And you can get some pretty nice plus numbers right now. I mean, Scotty is plus 106, top five, ties included at DraftKings right now. I remember I had Rory last year. My biggest bet on the tournament was Rory, top five. And he was a nice plus price last year. That one got there. He won in the playoff, obviously. But when you go down the board, Colin is plus 215 right now, top 10.
Wow.
I mean, how big of a gamble is this to get involved with the guy when he's talking about his body in such a manner?
I mean, it's a gamble, but I don't know, man. I think it's worth it. When you're looking at the prices, it's worth it. It's not like we're coming in here and buying at the top of the market. You know, you're throwing in a guy, and I'll invoke because it is Morikawa. It's not health, but remember when he won the British Open the first time? And he had played the Scottish the week before. It was like his first time ever playing Lynx golf. It was such a big deal. And he was ass. And then there was like, man, he's going to be terrible. And then I had Jordan Spieth that year to win the British Open. And he just, Colin Morikawa, if I remember correctly, just wire to wire. Mm-hmm. Second time ever playing Lynx golf. He might be cooked. Just absolutely destroyed the course in one.
I recall that. Yep.
Yeah. So like narrative and whatnot. I mean, we just don't really obviously know any of this stuff. And if he's there, it's the same thing with basketball and injury reports and everything like that. If he's there, part of him thinks that he can do it. And so if he feels like he's comfortable enough with his body to go out there with a serious injury like a back and give it a shot, wouldn't you want to try it? Wouldn't you think that, all right, then maybe he can do this from a health perspective?
Maybe. And maybe there's a reason why, you know, he was 30 to 1 when he was piping hot earlier this year, when the number really hasn't moved that much.
No.
You know? I would say, boy, Rahm now is unbettable to me at plus 910. I have him in pocket. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I got him around 18 to 1 when he was rip-roaring hot. On the Live Tour, along with Bryson, I got him at 15 to 1. Bryson's still bettable, in my opinion. I think you can find around 12 to 1 on Bryson. I don't hate that. He's got a good history here as well. He played with McIlroy last year in the final day. He's got the goods. He's been in the mix. He's won majors before. So Bryson, even top 10 right now, is plus money. Don't hate it. I think he can have a great weekend. I don't want to go back-to-back with Rory. That's one of the trends that Dave Tindall talked about. He's like, it's very difficult to go back to back at the Masters. You don't want a guy when he won it the previous year. And what? So some of those names we already talked about, Fitzy's down to plus 2350 at DraftKings. And he has had a great, you know, start to the season this year. Is that a bettable number in your opinion?
Give it to me again.
Plus 2350 on Matt Fitzpatrick.
I would say so.
Think so?
I think that's probably right at the verge of where you would want to play it, isn't it?
I don't know. I think
like any cheaper, you wouldn't want it.
No, I got to pass on that. I would.
Okay.
I mean, right now, the number keeps going down for Patrick Reed. He's 43-1 at DK. Now, people were gobbling him up when he was playing really well earlier this year, and he dropped all the way to 30-1 or below. I think Patrick Reed's turning into a number right now that I might have to add in pocket.
Yeah, at over 40. I'm looking at my phone to see like just some different prices and what's out there. So,
well, I got to point this out. The boys at Circa do the best job you're going to see.
Yeah.
So if you're in a Circa state or you happen to be coming to Las Vegas, you absolutely must look at their odds board to bet any golf tournament, specifically the Masters, because they have the lowest hold percentage.
Yeah.
And their numbers are pretty. Maybe there are some offshores that are as good. It's typically going to be Circa, and that's the number one place that you want to bet.
Yeah, minimal hold, better prices for you. Pretty easy comparison there when you're talking about shopping around.
Yep.
Before we get off, because we're running up against it, anything else here? I know Paul likes to bet like the no. Does he bet the no hole in one?
Usually, he's betting the yes this year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We typically get one. I think it usually comes on Sundays at the Masters on 16 there. But yeah, he's going to be on the yes for that.
Okay. All right. On the other side, let's hit a little baseball in the association. Yet again, we've talked about this many times in this podcast, but a lesson for all of you that these markets have no idea what they're talking about. So a big weekend for the youngster Cooper Flagg, who scored nearly 100 points in two games. And Mitch, he is now the favorite to win Rookie of the Year. You, 4 days ago, had to put down about $1,600 to win 100 on Con Knipple to win Rookie of the Year because of the straw poll that Tim Bontemps released, with the Rookie of the Year results being that Con Knipple was up 80-20 in the first place votes. And here we are, and now he is the odds-on favorite of over $2 to win Rookie of the Year after two games. What are we doing?
So let me put this into probabilities. I'll translate the money line into probabilities for those people who want kind of an idea of what the numbers overall mean. So Knipple got as high as minus 2,000 or minus 2,500 from what I
looked at. I didn't even see it was that high. Wow. My highest was like 1,600 or 1,800. Okay.
Yep. So that translates to 95% or better to win the award. And after two games by Cooper Flagg in meaningless April basketball, Con Knipple is now 40%.
The 5% is happening.
Give or take.
No, the 5% is happening. Are you an idiot?
Well, here's what happened. Obviously, you mentioned this, the 96 points. People lost their minds. I believe that this is a mistake. Now, I have Knipple already, plus 450. Months ago on the pod, talked about that. I parlayed last Thursday before the straw poll came out. I took a shot. I parlayed SGA and Con Knipple at minus 138 to win those two awards. I think I have to add more Con. This, to me, feels like the NFL MVP all over again. When the Rams went to Atlanta and lost to Matthew Stafford, was terrible.
Okay, I think you're right, but let me just throw this wrench into it really quickly. And I have to say, some of the discourse and some of these media members do drive me crazy with their logic and the way that they speak. And now, I will caveat this with two things. First off, this is not a voter. They have admitted that they do not have a vote, but they did have a vote in the straw poll. So maybe this is representative of how some people will vote when they get their actual ballots, but he will not have a vote. Tim McMahon on the Hoop Collective podcast was part of the straw poll. He will not have an actual vote, but he was part of the straw poll. He voted for Con Knipple in the straw poll. On the Monday episode, he said his vote would be flipped.
Well, and that's what it comes down to, right? Is Paulie like, pointed this out on Follow the Money on Monday. How many of those people in the straw poll were, quote, flippable?
Yes. I don't know. I would like to think that you're of a stronger conviction that if a guy deserved a first place vote, two games from the other dude would not be enough to flip it. But we also don't know the degree in their own mind what the separation that was, right. I guess, between the two. And here's the other thing that I think is going to be really interesting, whether this matters or not. So Luka Doncic is going to have this appeal, or whatever you want to call it, because he missed two games for the birth of his child. So this was explained by Tim Bontemps on the same podcast, that because of that happening, the ballots are going to be delayed in being sent out to the voters. So they will not get it, according to Bontemps, until the Friday of the play-in week.
Wow.
And they will have 20, yes, and they will have 24 hours then to submit that. So what I'm saying is usually you'll get your ballots earlier before the end of the regular season. You'll submit it. This is like the unanswerable question, which is, with more time postseason to think on it, to dwell on it, to look at what the seasons were as a whole, and let's just say Con Knipple goes nuts in two play-in games for the Charlotte Hornets. Again, it's not fair. It should be a regular season award. He will at least have two other moments where, you know what voters do this all the time. We say it all the time. They want to be on the right side of history. And if Con Knipple goes ham in a play-in game or two and gets the Charlotte Hornets into the postseason, will that affect these voters who are getting their ballots late?
Okay. But yes, it will, because if he's going to flip, despite not having a vote, based on two games by Cooper Flagg against questionable competition, are you serious?
Yep.
I mean, come on. We can't be doing this.
And it's human nature. It's human nature to sit there and say, well, I shouldn't be counting these games, but look how good he was, right? And look how good he was in the regular season. He helped the Charlotte Hornets get there. I think that might impact what you're looking at here.
All right, so I know we're more of a futures podcast. In fact, we're strictly futures, but taping this on Tuesday morning, Mavericks do play tonight, and they got a couple of games left this week before the end of the regular season. I am playing Cooper Flagg props every single game. I already played him over 25.5 tonight, minus 125 against the Clippers. I played over 39.5 PRA tonight as well. I'm going to play him every game, because what happened last Friday, I believe, after Kidd got ejected and Vogel took over and put him back into the game, that's all I needed to know right there.
Yep. They're going for it. They've got nothing left.
Yep.
Like, just give him the ball every possession and just go and see what you got, Kidd.
I wonder what his usage rate in the last two, I didn't look at that, the last two games.
I'll tell you right now.
And
give me 2 seconds.
And if that could project over the final few games during the regular season, it's got to be an all-time high for a rookie, or in like the 99th percentile for a rookie. It has to be.
Okay, so usage rate for the season for a benchmark is 27.4%. The last two games, you said?
Yeah.
It's 39%.
That seems pretty high.
So 40% of the possessions are going through Cooper, are ending with Cooper Flagg.
Why does that change?
Right. No, you're right. That's absolutely brilliant. And in those two games, as we know, right, averaging the 48 points, he's been nuts. But yes, you're right. It's not like he's doing this on minimal shot attempts. Do you know combined how many shot attempts he has in the last two games?
I do not.
57.
Oh! From the floor?
Yes.
Oh, my Lord.
Now, and here's the crazy part, because he deserves credit for it. He's shooting 58%.
No, I mean,
so he's taken 57 shots from the floor in two games, and he's shooting 57.9%.
It feels to me like the Mavericks are giving us the answers to the test in advance of what's going to happen in the games. So why not try to capitalize on that?
Yes, absolutely.
57 shots? That's Michael Jordan territory.
Yes, you're right. They're just rolling out and saying, go get a Coop. It's absolutely stupid.
And by the way,
and to your point,
go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to point, to your point about the player props, at least against the Clippers, the way this breaks down is the Clippers, it's not that they don't have anything to play for, but they have enough of a gap right now that the way the schedule breaks down for them is they could lose the next two games, and the only thing that they would need is to beat Portland on April 10th. So in other words, like, the Clippers might not take this seriously. We'll see what happens going forward. But, you know, there might be that aspect where Cooper Flagg could get his, because the only goal for the Clippers right now is to cement their status inside of the, you know, for the 8 seed.
Okay.
So they don't have to play a single elimination game.
Okay. Next up, by the way, there's a back-to-back tomorrow night for the Mavericks.
Yep.
They play at Phoenix. They play Friday at San Antonio. That game's probably going to be meaningless for the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Sunday, my God, what's he going to do against the Chicago Bulls?
That one's going to be fun. What do you set the point total for?
I mean, if he's still playing and he goes 35. Off like this, it's going to be 32.5.
Yeah. It's going to be must-watch TV on that Sunday.
Pretty much, yeah.
There's going to be no question about it.
Is that game? Is that game? I wonder. Hold on. Let me check where that's going to be available on TV. No,
there's no shot.
Just the local. Yeah. Okay. You got to have the package to get it done.
You can come over. I got the package.
Okay.
Also about the MLB package again. We could talk about that. We'll talk about baseball here in a minute. I fell for it. I know. They were offering Angels TV. Come on now. Really quickly, I will say, I just want to point out, I've said this 1,000 times, and I feel stronger about it as we head into baseball really quick, but the Nuggets have won 9 straight. They are a threat. And I will tell you this right now, the San Antonio Spurs do not want them to finish third where they're at right now.
I would agree.
Because that is a second-round series. They would have to go through Denver. And I am telling you, Denver, I will call my shot, is going to win that series. I think Jokic is awesome. We saw it. One of the best tweets I saw over the weekend. It was a Nuggets fan account, but it was great. Everybody's better than Jokic until it's time to be better than Jokic. Mm. And he was awesome in that game. He hits that Sambor shuffle over the shot. Statistically, he has actually dominated Wembanyama in the early going in his career. I think that is a problem for San Antonio. And guess what? The Nuggets are going to be the 3 seed because the Lakers are falling. They're injured. They've lost 2 straight. They're a half game behind Denver right now. I am just telling you this. Oklahoma City and Denver, Western Conference Finals, you can book it. They're going to play. And I think Denver's a legit threat to beat that team. So just want to throw that out.
My only addition would be, boy, I can't wait for the postseason because that game this past Saturday was one of the games of the year. Oh. And we have just had to put up with the nonstop garbage now with the tanking for 2 months. Let's get to the postseason already.
Yep, I'm really looking forward to it. All right, let's take a break, wrap up. We have some submission from listeners in baseball. I believe Mitch has added a Cy Young ticket to his account, and it better be the right guy. So you want me to guess where you added this ticket for Cy Young?
I do, yep. And it was before the week started.
Okay, AL or NL?
American League.
Jose Soriano.
Correct. Ding, ding, ding. We have a winner, Johnny.
God, this dude's so good.
I told you. I mean, his ceiling, now, low floor, at least up until this year, and maybe that's still going to be a thing. I'm a big believer in his ceiling. Last night, completely, as the kids say, JBT says, dog walked Chris Sale. Did I use it correctly?
Sure.
8 innings.
Dude, Chris Sale was assaulting himself last night. He took a baseball and smacked it into his head.
What was
his command was, I don't know, his command was awful. He hit 2 dudes in 1 inning. I don't know what was going on. Like, Sale was an absolute nightmare for those who didn't watch it. And then on the other side, you get Soriano, cool as a cucumber, just wheeling and dealing, bro.
8 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned, gave up that home run to Drake Baldwin, quietly having a fantastic start to the season.
Baldwin almost took him deep again later in the game, too, but it died at the track.
10 Ks. ERA on the year, 0.45, whip 0.65. If he, and by the way, the biggest key to last night, in my opinion, 0 walks for Soriano. If he can somehow limit the walks and get the control down, this dude's ceiling is phenomenal, and I have been betting him. I actually have like 3 bets on him now at 100-1. One book offered me $5 on that, so I said, I think I'm going to delete my account, and I added some 75-1 on him, but Soriano, look, it's the American League. Any of these leagues, it's going to be difficult to win. Off to a rip-roaring start, and he's going to have a start or two probably coming up where it's like, that's the old Jose Soriano. 4 innings, 6 runs, 5 walks.
Yep.
But if he can just limit those to like 1 or 2 starts the entire year, I'm looking at some of the numbers in the same range as Jose Soriano right now. Michael Wacha, Shane Smith, Yu Savage hasn't even started. Shane Bieber, Severino, yep. Bybee, Baz, Rasmussen. Grayson Rodriguez is lower than him. Garrett Cole, Luis Gil, Sonny Gray. 100-1, and he has a bigger number than any of those guys I just talked about. Come on. I had to add that to the account.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. I mean, everything you're talking about, too. For him as well, very slight, but the fastball velo is up just a little bit. You know, not a ton, but it's up a little bit here so far this year. The thing you worry about is... when he gives up contact, it is hard contact.
Yeah.
So far this year, but I'm with you. You know, it's funny. So last year, I'm always a year ahead of my teams. Last year, I had like a 250-1 ticket on him to win Cy Young, and if you remember, he was great on the road.
Yep.
I think he had some really good home road splits last year for the road starts, and you were wondering if maybe that was going to maybe even out at some point, but. He's been great. He's only given up 1 barrel so far this year, so that's a pretty good sign. The hard contact there, as you mentioned, but. I'm with you, man. Like, the dude has all the stuff in the world. And, like, for me, as an Angels fan, this is something you've been waiting for a little bit. And he's there. I mean, and he's a big dude, too. So you kind of hope that health-wise he can hold together. He's like 6'3", 6'4", 220. He's got the power. So I would agree with every step of the way. What's his, I was trying to look right now. What's the, do you know what the current number is on him to win this thing?
No, it's still 100.
Still 100?
Yep. I was actually, I'll be honest, I was hoping the number was more what I bet him last week.
Ready to get hurt again, you know what I mean?
Well, for sure. But I mean, Shane McClanahan is 65-1. Joe Ryan's 45-1. Are we serious here with these numbers? I'll give you one guy to watch, though, too. He's going today. So by the time this is out and people are listening, maybe the game's over with. But Kevin Gausman's 35-1 at DK right now.
Sure.
Phenomenal start to the season. If he shuts down the Dodgers, that number's going to drop. That's cut in half tonight if he has a great start. Now, this would be part of the perils of betting any of this stuff whenever. If the Dodgers score 8 runs tonight in 4 innings, then that sucks.
Yeah.
You know?
I have, really quickly, how much time we got? Okay, I'm in here. Sorry, I'm all over the place. I'm looking up a bunch of stuff. If his first stretch in the majors was longer, then I would have some confidence that he could pitch enough innings to get it done. But I will say this. I don't know how much you've watched of Parker Messick for Cleveland. That dude's got some good stuff, man. I mean, the strikeout rate's there. He's got to work on the command a little bit, but it keeps the ball down. He has been pretty impressive early on. And I don't know if he's going to, again, his first year in the majors was last year. He pitched like 30 innings. So I don't think he's going to get to 200, but this dude has been freaking great.
I have tracked him during his games, and he's putting up pretty good numbers overall. So now I have two Cy Young Award winners in the American League. One, Rodgers, who's going today for Baltimore. The other one would be Jose Soriano. I do think there's another bet that we got to make right now before the number goes away, and it's the Brewers to win the division. Cubs have injuries now. Cubs. Horton, the staff.
Reds stink.
Right, Reds are exactly right. Pirates, great story so far. Losers on Monday, but the Brewers are going to do this yet again. If you look at their team batting numbers, a lot of the key metrics are like top 3 to top 5, and some of the they have 21 stolen bases this year, 9 more than the next closest team. Their base running metric blows away the competition. They're so good on the bases. Not hitting a lot of home runs. They have 10, for example. The Dodgers have 21, but they're weighted on base. They're even like their slug. The Brewers are crushing it so far this year, and I expect it to be a thing throughout the entire season. Their pitching hasn't been great, by the way.
Yeah.
They're just scoring a ton of runs.
I was trying to see. Oh, he played 73 games last year. Never mind. So, like, part of my, because I'll tie in the fantasy really quickly. Part of my strategy this year was just like grabbing a bunch of young dudes to see, like, hey, like, let's see what they got. One of the guys that's been off to a pretty decent start in terms of average on base percentage, Justin Crawford out there in Philly. He's 22-1 to win NL Rookie of the Year. And my guy that is actually, he played over 70 games last year, so he is not going to, or he's not going to qualify because he's not a rookie anymore. But I would look out for one Brady House for Washington.
Okay.
My dude has been off to a very strong start here so far on the season. Smacked 2 doubles, went 3-5 yesterday. For the season, he's hitting .333. He's already hit 2 homers, driven in 5, scored 7 times. The guy's been awesome. And maybe from a future standpoint, I mean, nothing really there outside of, hey, day-to-day, keep an eye on what's going on. And I'd also point out that Kurt Suzuki's 20-1 to win Manager of the Year.
Okay. You like that one? Did you bet it?
No.
Okay.
I would want 1,000. I don't know if you watched the series in Chicago where they lost the second game of the series. He took too long to challenge a play. He didn't realize there was a time limit.
Oh, boy.
So then he tried to challenge, and the ump's like talking to him like, guy, like, dude. Like,
time's up, pal.
Yeah, you can't do that. He's like, what do you mean? No, you can't.
I thought I had 5
There's
minutes.
There's a time limit, bro. Yeah, I have something on my belt that vibrates when the time is up, and you took another 20 seconds. Can't do it.
I'll give you another guy. Day-to-day stuff. He's not going to win the MVP or anything like that on this team. But the start that CJ Abrams has had for Washington, he has 4 home runs already. A couple stolen bases. He had 31 stolen bases the last 2 years. He had 47 the year before that. He's got 20 home run potential. But like from a day-to-day standpoint, I'd be taking a peek at Abrams almost all the time.
Okay, I like it. All right, last minute here. Shout out to Preston. Said, thank you guys for always answering my questions. If I had social media, I'd post my tickets there so you could see. If the show has an email, I'd love to send them in. Both the Michigan and Arizona tickets are placed in September. Mitch was correct. I'm usually betting less than a normal wager on those very early odds, especially when the boosts I get usually read max $10 to $20 wager. But the boosts are a smart thing. We brought this up last week.
Sure.
So shout out to Preston. Good job on that, man. Congratulations.
No, if they're going to give you boosts, you got to use them for something, right?
Yep.
And then so
absolutely.
Why not, if it's going to be a smaller bet, okay, boost the odds on a team to win it, and that's still going to be a fun one to have in the account.
All right. Well, that does it for this episode of Pod to the Futures. It was a fun one. Baseball season's here. Love chatting that up. So we'll have plenty of that as the episodes go along. We'll also get closer to the draft, Kentucky Derby. There's a ton of events, man. And the postseason is about to get started as well. We'll have a big postseason breakdown next week on Pod to the Future. So for Wyatt and for Mitch, we appreciate it. I also appreciate it. Like, rate, review, and subscribe. And we will talk to you next week here on Pod to the Futures.